things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah! That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour. Hi!
Hi.
What's on your mind, Jenny? What did you just say to me?
I said, why name boxers? Like, boxers, like the dog breed.
Yeah.
Boxers. If they can't box.
Are they boxy?
I don't know.
Less shaped like a box?
Their head is. They got a big old blockhead. Doberman pinchers?
Can't pinch.
You know?
I don't know. I don't know. I didn't choose the dog names.
I'm just saying. Rottweilers? Hardly any wiles. Hardly any.
Barely a one.
Not one while between them. I just would like to have like a really casual conversation with whoever named dogs because I feel like they did a bad job and I could just do better.
Okay, the name Boxer is supposedly derived from the breed's tendency to play by standing on its hind legs and boxing with its front paws.
Like kangaroo style?
Yeah.
All right. What's that? Wasn't, hold on. That unlocked.
A whole nother thing?
A deep memory. What was that movie? About the kangaroo. It was like Air Bud, but kangaroo.
Oh, yeah.
Mid-90s.
Yeah.
Hold on. We're gonna get this. Kangaroo movie. I'm gonna say it's Kangaroo Jack. Kangaroo Jack! Yeah, he wore a hoodie and sunglasses. He was a cool kangaroo.
Nice. Do you remember the night that we went through a whole list of animals that you were surprised by? Like, ponies are not baby horses.
Ponies and horses are different.
They're not the same.
I really thought that ponies were just ponies until they became
horses.
Yeah. Ian still makes fun of me because I call, like, you have carrots, baby carrots, mm-hmm. and then you have horse carrots.
Yeah.
That which are, like, the whole
yeah.
the carrot that you feed horses. And Ian, who grew up around horses, is like, who taught you to feed horses carrots? And I was like, it's their favorite snack. Apparently, no. Apparently, no, it's not.
What is the horse's favorite snack?
Hay? I don't know.
Ian.
They have boring horses. Apples?
I yeah.
Like horses eat apples. Can you?
I fed my horse apples and carrots and celery and
yeah.
rhubarb when I was feeling spicy and kind of like an asshole.
Fuck this horse.
Because he hated it. But it looked like celery.
Why did you? I'm sorry. Back up. When in your life did you have access to a horse?
When I lived on the farm with Steven and my mom, I had a horse named Spooky.
Oh.
And he was all white.
Okay.
He was mean as fuck.
Was he spooky?
He was so mean. He hated the saddle.
Okay.
So I only rode him without one. And he liked me. Enough to let me ride him.
You rode a horse bareback?
Yeah. I was like 15.
What?
Yeah, he would buck me off. I'd fall off. He'd run back around. He'd stand next to me. And then I'd have to like figure out how to get back on him.
I feel like I don't even know you.
Hold, I have a picture.
Of you and a horse?
Yeah, I literally just saw it like yesterday. I was looking for pictures of me and Claire. And I found my pictures of me and my horse.
I can't believe you had a fucking horse.
Yeah. So I lived on a farm. Our neighbor was a mom and a daughter about my age.
Okay.
And they had Spooky.
Okay.
And then they could no longer afford to keep Spooky.
What kind of costs are associated with horse ownership?
A lot. Really? They take a lot of maintenance.
Like what?
Like you have to have somebody come out and trim their hooves. To feed them is quite a lot.
What do you feed them? Not carrots, apparently.
Hay, cornmeal.
Cornmeal?
Yeah, like, that's like, I don't know how to explain it. It's cornmeal.
Like how you make cornbread?
No, it's like chunkier. That's not really the right word I'm looking for, but it's like, grainy, kind of, but like the size of corn.
It's corn kernels.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they eat that.
This is a whole new, who knew that buried deep down there was Cowboy Taylor?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had to, I went to dinner the other night with a couple of the people I work with, and one of the regionals was like, so tell me your life story. Where'd you grow up? And I was like, well,
apparently with horses,
a little bit of everywhere. And we were talking about, we were at a steak restaurant. So we were talking about, like, if you grew up with animals and it, did you like
eat them?
And I was like, yeah, we had cows and chickens and all that. And she was like, okay, so what kind of cows were they? And I was like, they were beef cows. And
what other kind of cow? Milk cows.
And she was like, okay, so what? You just like go out, you feed them, and one day you just send them off and then you get meat back? And I was like, yep, that's pretty much how it goes.
How do you decide which one you eat? The mean ones?
You eat all of them.
Oh.
Eventually.
Of course.
What?
But then once you run out of cows, you buy more.
You buy more.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Have you can...
or your cows can have calves and then you grow those.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. If you... yeah, they'll just make more.
They'll just make more. They reproduce like that sometimes.
Okay.
Weird. Mm-hmm. So that was fun. A fun realization for this regional to be like, you do not look like a girl that came from a farm. And
no.
I was like, I know. But I learned how to drive on a tractor. That's how I learned how to drive a car.
A tractor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was driving a tractor when I was 14.
Do I even know you?
This was pre-Jenny and Taylor.
Oh my God. Not by much.
Not by much. No, we met like a couple years later. But yeah, I learned how to drive on a tractor.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. That explains a lot about your driving.
Reckless.
No, it was gonna, like, very steady.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you have guys on the back of your, if so,
guys,
I would drive the tractor while they baled hay. So I drove the tractor and then I would have a thing on the back.
Who?
Steven and my brothers, Sean and Jesse, that I don't ever talk about because Steven's not married to my mom anymore, but I have two older brothers.
Yeah.
And my cousin and some of the other guys.
Is Jesse hot?
What a weird question to ask me.
I feel
he's an attractive human.
I feel like I remember a hot stepbrother named Jesse.
That's the one.
Okay.
Sorry, Jess. Abby had a huge crush on him.
Okay, yes, huge. That's how I know him. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that I would drive the tractor while they would bale hay on the back, and if I swerved or went around a corner too tight, I could lose a guy. So you just had to be careful.
This is weird. For me.
It's like a new life you didn't know I had.
I really feel like you have been keeping like secrets from me. And I hate it.
That's not.
So what else have you done that I don't know about, Taylor? Hold on, I'm getting mad.
Hold on.
I'm trying to work myself into an argument here. I'm not done fighting yet.
Oh, your Scorpio is just like raring.
Like, how dare you keep this from me? You were a cowgirl.
Yeah, I was. I was really not a fan of cows. I think they're dead in the eyes.
Agree. I feel like that about goats. I fucking hate goats. Hate their cheese, hate their milk, hate their eyes.
See, I don't hate goats. But the cows are just dumb and they don't know their own body space very well. So like they would just like knock you over. Like if you're in their way, they can like just move to the side and just knock you down.
What?
They're just not very smart. And
the
then
disrespect.
They would. Yeah. And then they got out all the time. We had like an electric fence that kept them in. And
do we need to crank up the voltage on that?
Oh my gosh. Well, sometimes like the electric fence would go down.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't know about it because you're not trying to out there touch it.
Right.
But
did you ever pee on it?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't. None of my friends did. I don't think we would all hold hands and then one person would touch it.
How do you choose who's at the front of the line?
Just draw a leg of the draw.
Welcome to rural Indiana podcasting with Taylor and it's called a little bit corn.
A little bit corn. It's just a wild time. We the rules of the farm were pretty here and there.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember one time two of my friends, they will remain nameless due to the topic of the story.
Okay.
Got snowed in at the farm, which okay. We lived about 8 miles outside of town.
Okay, so but put that in context. town was like 400 people.
Yeah. Well, this is Portland.
Oh, God.
So, I mean, yeah, roughly about 400 people. Mm-hmm. But it took a really long time for the snow plow people to come out to us.
Sure.
So if you got snowed in, you were just stuck.
Sorry.
Yeah. Like, we plowed ourselves out, mm-hmm. basically.
This is why people drove tractors to school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which was a real thing where I went to high school.
Absolutely. So, they got snowed in my house for probably a week. It was a long time.
What?
We just kept saying, like, you should just stay here again tonight.
Who was this? Edit it out.
Abby and Allie.
Okay.
One night, we were like, let's make daiquiris.
Oh, fuck.
We were children. We were like, I think Allie might have been 15. Abby and I were definitely 13 or 14. Maybe a tiny bit older, but not by a lot. And so we got out. We have no idea what goes into a daiquiri.
Sure.
At all.
Mm-hmm.
So we got out a blender.
I'm 31. I still am not convinced. Strawberries.
Yeah. Well, we had a daiquiri mix.
Okay.
So, like, great. So we figured blender, ice, daiquiri mix, an alcohol
mm-hmm.
of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
So we got out wine.
Oh.
To add that
to the daiquiris.
To the daiquiri, thinking Yikes. That was going to work. So it was like midnight, 1 a.m. And I don't know what we thought that we were going to be able to like get away with like using this blender in the middle of the night.
No one will notice.
How would they know? How would they know?
They're never going to know.
They're not going to know. So then you in that celery.
I really want to eat it.
Going to kill me. Go ahead.
We're still eating celery here.
A week has gone by
I'm still eating the same stick of celery.
We left it here. It got a little crusty. It's fine.
Mm, that extra crunch.
It would probably actually be really soft.
But, really good.
So my stepdad came downstairs
mm-hmm.
and I thought we were going to get in trouble for sure.
Sure.
We're barely teens.
13-year-olds drinking daiquiris at 2 a.m.
Uh-huh. And one of my favorite stepdad moments ever. He looks at us, looks at the table with all the shit on it, laughs, and goes, don't use that blender. Use this blender.
What?
He gets us a different blender out. Goes back upstairs.
He's like, I don't even want to know.
I don't care.
What happens the rest of the night?
These three girls are not going to get hammered on
wine daiquiris
that they don't even know how much to add. They're probably like, A splash of wine.
Oh my God.
To these daiquiris. They were awful.
Oh, I believe it. Did you act like you were hammered?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you have
to. Hysterically laughing at nothing. I'm pretty sure we watched as many Final Destinations that were out at that point.
Yeah.
Like, we just put those on repeat, convinced ourselves we were going to die at, like, the drop of a hat.
Sure. Alcohol poisoning.
Drunk on air.
As you do. As you do. I have a very similar story. Ironically, my first alcoholic drink, was mm-hmm. given to me by Ian's ex-wife.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Fun.
Yeah. Me and her younger sisters were really close when we were kiddos. So,
That's cute.
It was like 3 drinks of like a Smirnoff Ice. And I was
The first time I actually ever got drunk, I was on my younger Taylor bullshit. And just thought that, like, so my mom was an alcoholic,
mm-hmm.
and she would drink quite a bit for an alcoholic. And one day I was just like, if you can't beat them, join them.
Oh, God.
So mom and I got hammered on our front porch in the middle of the day.
How old were you?
On, like, a Friday. I was, like, 17 or 18.
Oh, God.
I was still in high school. Got hammered. I think we drank like an entire, like.
What'd you drink?
We were mixing vodka and Sunny D.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. At some point, I remember me going to the neighbor's house because they had left their dog out all day and I was very big upset about this dog being out all day. And so I took the dog home with me.
So you stole the neighbor's dog?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the next day, I had to go back and be like, I'm so sorry.
I stole your dog.
It was so embarrassing.
Were they fine?
They were like, oh, great. We figured something weird had happened because, like, he didn't, like, it was very clear that somebody had undone the chain. It's sure. not like he broke his Loose. Collar.
Yeah.
And in my like drunken state, I was just very convinced that they had left him there to die.
Sure.
And yeah. he didn't uh-huh. have food or water. And he was going to perish without my help.
Your fucking Snow White tendencies are coming out full force in this story, Taylor.
Oh my God. It was so embarrassing. And I remember the next day I was like, holy God, I cannot understand how my mom does this every single day.
Right.
Because I feel like garbage. And mom was just like fresh as a daisy.
Regular Joni is huge.
Yep. Totally good.
Amazing.
And I just remember like the next day being like, okay, well, that didn't work. Because mom had a great time. I thought if my mom saw me drunk, like, it might make her, like, have her maternal instincts kick in.
No.
No, that is not what happened. She was like, I have a new best friend.
Great. A new drinking buddy.
A new drinking buddy. As an that is the only thing that happened.
Yeah.
That's how alcoholics think.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, we really got into it.
Yeah, we did.
Weirdly, a crime that you committed. A crime, Taylor's underage
so
drinking.
So many crimes. It's just... Thievery, Jenny. Don't forget the thievery.
The thievery and the crimage.
Yeah, all happening. So, yeah, it's True Crime Day. Welcome to A Little Bit Grim. It's a podcast.
That's Taylor.
That's Jenny.
Hi,
we're
welcome.
Sorry. We got squirrely.
Imagine this is your first step that you ever listen to.
I hope that you don't hate it if this is your first step.
I mean, we do other stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes we talk about true crime.
Which I will be doing right now.
Okay.
All right. Are you excited for this story today? Because I'm really excited.
I am really excited for this story today. What are you going to tell me about? How awful is it?
It is a survivor story.
Okay, good. Okay.
So we love that.
I will guard my heart a little less.
Yeah. So this is... Oh, Happy New Year's Eve.
Oh, Happy New Year's Eve.
Hey.
Almost 2022.
So close. Okay. So my sources are the I Survived TV show, mm-hmm. and there's also an I Survived podcast, and okay. I listened and watched both.
Okay.
An article in Cape Gazette written by Melissa Steele.
Oh.
And this is the story of Debbie Puglisi.
Okay.
Debbie Puglisi lived a relatively average life with her husband, Anthony, whom everyone called Nino. Debbie Puglisi lived a relatively average life with her husband, Anthony, whom everyone called Nino. In 1998, they had just downsized their home after their twin children, Melissa and Michael, had gone off to college. Debbie met Nino in the 70s, and Nino had asked a friend of his, Bill, if he knew if any of the girls were nice enough for him to take home to meet his family.
Oh.
Bill pointed across the bar and picked out Debbie. She was smart, kind, and pretty. Definitely a girl any guy would feel happy to take home to mom. And they started dating and were married in 1973.
Wow. Okay.
Fast forward to 1998, and they were getting ready to celebrate their 25th wedding anniversary.
Ooh.
Debbie had purchased some rose bushes and had decided to plant them in the front lawn of her new home. She asked Nino to let her know when it was about 5 minutes till four so that she could call into her nursing job and get her assignments for the evening. As she tended to the roses, she felt like it was getting close to four, but Nino hadn't come out yet, so she assumed that she was still good on time. Finally, though, she realized that it was later than 4 o'clock, and she walked into the home. And that's when she was ambushed.
Ooh.
Debbie did not see her attacker. He struck her on the left side of her head. She fell to the ground, but she was not unconscious. She was dazed and in shock, wondering where her husband was. But she heard a man's voice asking her where the money was. Debbie was too shocked and confused to answer him. She laid on the ground and tried to work out what was happening. She laid there for a few moments before he started to tie her wrists and ankles together.
Ooh.
He dragged her down a flight of steps and placed her face down on the concrete floor. Debbie tried to stay still and hope that he would just leave, but once she was face down, he pulled down her sweatpants and raped her. After that horrifying attack was over, the assailant dragged her back upstairs and covered her in a quilt. Debbie sighed a breath of relief, thinking that the ordeal was over. She could hear footsteps moving away from her and the door close.
Oh, God.
Suddenly, the attacker came back and picked up Debbie while she was wrapped in the quilt. She looked up and saw the man for the first time. He didn't speak to her at all, just carried her out into the foyer, and Debbie looked toward the door, which was open. She could see a car backed up to the door, and she knew she was about to be taken.
Oh, God.
He held a knife to her throat and threatened to kill her if she made a sound. She was tossed into the trunk of his car, and he slammed the lid. As soon as the car was in motion, she started to try to unbind herself from the restraints. Her plan was that as soon as he stopped the car, she would pop out of the trunk and try to make a run for it.
Okay. I like the plan.
Yep. However, her plans dissipated into thin air when he opened the trunk and she realized he had parked inside a garage and she was trapped.
Fuck.
Her attacker bundled her up in the quilt again and took her inside his house. He took her to the bedroom and tossed her onto the king-size bed. He realized that she had been successful in unbinding her wrists and that she was trying to escape. He brutally punished her by sodomizing her and raping her again. I know. I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm just going to cling on that this is a survivor story.
Yep.
Woo! Okay.
She makes it out.
Okay.
Debbie pleaded with him to stop and to let her go. She wouldn't tell anyone if he would just let her go. But she realized that when she pleaded with him, he just laughed and it seemed to make him enjoy the torture even more.
Oh.
This was the last time that she would plead with him.
Okay.
Debbie started to take in her surroundings and really start to take stock of her situation. The man that had taken her captive was tall, African-American, who appeared to be under the influence of drugs. Little did she know that this man had waited in her home for her and had helped himself to several beers while he waited for her to come inside.
Ew.
Before that, he had smoked crack cocaine.
Okay. Perfect.
Yeah. After he redressed her, he bound her wrists and ankles so tightly she could not move them. He also bound her legs together at the thigh and rope, and then tied her ankles to her wrist, hog-tying her.
Mm.
He put a washcloth in her mouth and put duct tape around her head to keep it in place. Then he blindfolded her and left her on the bed. The evening drew on, and eventually she fell asleep. She was woken by the sound of two gunshots. Debbie didn't realize that he had had a gun. She had only seen the knife at this point and was terrified to learn of additional weaponry. The next morning, the man confided in Debbie that the night before he saw headlights coming in through the front window and thought that the police had found him. He shot at what he thought were the police twice, but only managed to shatter the front window. For a while, he was consumed with the idea that the neighbors may see and raise suspicions. Eventually, he went into the living room and turned on the television. The news was on, and Debbie heard the anchor say that a man named Anthony Puglisi had been shot and killed in his home and that his wife was missing. It didn't even occur to her that her husband might be dead.
Oh, God.
She thought he was out there looking for her. At that moment, the attacker came in and said, "I'm sorry, I had to kill your husband."
Oh, my God.
He then shut the door and left Debbie alone with her thoughts. Debbie knew she could not cry. She said that if she cried, he would hurt her even more. Shortly after she learned her husband had been murdered, the murderer came back into the room and raped her again.
Oh, my God.
Immediately after, he retied her and replaced the washcloth and put duct tape around her head again. He looked at her and said, "You know, I really should go to work."
Old boy has a job?
Old boy has a job.
Okay.
At this point, the only thing that she could think of were her children. Michael and Melissa would have been told at this point that their father had been killed and that their mother was missing. All Debbie wanted to do was comfort them.
Mm.
That evening, her attacker did something strange and out of character. He came back into the room and unbound her. He took the duct tape and washcloth out of her mouth, removed her blindfold, and turned on the light.
She hasn't been with him very long at this point, right?
2 days.
That's not very long for him to, like, trust her.
Right. And he started talking to her like she was just any old person over for a cup of tea.
Oh, just some company.
Yeah.
Great.
He confided in her that he was thinking about letting her go. But he said he was worried that if he did that, she would be able to describe him, describe his house, and his car. Debbie saw this as an opportunity to try to gain his trust and make him like her. And she started calling him sir when speaking to him.
Ooh, smart.
Yeah. She said, "Sir, no, you put me in the trunk of your car. I don't know what the outside of your house looks like. I don't even know where you were taking me." And then she offered him a suggestion. She said, "Why don't you just blindfold me again, put me back in your car, we can drive, and you can just leave me somewhere." He said he didn't think that that would work, and of course, Debbie's hopes were crushed.
Yikes.
He started talking out loud and said, "You know, if I just get rid of all the drugs in the house, and the police do find me, I probably won't get more than 10 years. This struck Debbie, and she realized that the person she was been dealing with may be far less intelligent than she suspected. If he thought he was going to get 10 years for murder, rape, and kidnapping, he was absolutely delusional.
Right.
This moment caused Debbie to switch her mentality. Previously, she was convinced that she was going to die in this house. But when she realized that she could possibly outsmart him, she switched into survival mode.
I love that for her.
Mm-hmm. That night, he slept in the bed with her, and the only thing that she could think was that she was sleeping next to her husband's murderer.
Ugh.
When he woke up the next morning, he told her he wanted her to take a shower. He hadn't allowed her to use the bathroom, so she had soiled her clothes, and she was incredibly weak. She asked if she could take a bath instead because she felt like she was too weak to stand in the shower. He made her undress in front of him and bathe in front of him, and when he asked if she was going to wash her hair, she said that her wrists were too sore from the binds to do that. So he washed her hair for her, and her stomach rolled.
It's a weird act of care for him.
Right.
Very, he seems like a bizarre character.
Yeah.
Did he plan this?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
I think he planned it as much as a person on crack could plan.
Okay.
Something. So, like, I think he thought about it 30 minutes before he did it. Not like he had a 6 months of, like...
a heist planned.
Right.
Okay.
When she got out of the bathtub, he had given her his clothes to wear. While they were at least clean, she still felt so disgusting that she was wearing his clothes.
Yeah.
As soon as she gets clean and dressed, he raped her once again. Another day passes, and on the morning of the fourth day, he surprised her by saying he wanted to feed her. She suggested that while he was out, that he would pick up, while he was out getting food, he picked up the newspaper, and she was shocked when he agreed to it. So he went out, got food, and when he came back, they looked at the newspaper while they ate. There was an article about her husband's murder in it, and they said that they were trying, it was like trying to find a needle in the haystack.
Mm.
Not only that, but it also insinuated that Debbie was a person of interest, as they didn't find any signs of her being removed from the house forcefully.
Oh my god.
Obviously, she was horribly upset by this, but she refused to let it show.
Oh. Poor Debbie.
I know.
I can't even imagine what is going through your mind at that point. Like, your kids... their dad is dead, and they probably think that you are in on it.
Right. Like, I would imagine that the kids probably were like, there's no way my mom had anything to do with this.
Yeah.
And she, well, I was like, why? Okay, if she was going to do that, wouldn't she have taken her purse, her cell phone, anything with her? Obviously, all of that was still in the house.
What is the purpose of this?
Unless this guy took her purse because he was after money. That isn't listed anywhere, and Debbie doesn't talk about that in her I Survived episode.
Okay.
But I find it really hard to believe that, like, they could have said, like, Debbie had anything to do with it for a long period of time. Like, she wasn't using her credit cards. She wasn't using any of her things. She...
what would tip police off as to them being in danger versus involved, you know?
Yeah. I think more, like, blood, more signs of a struggle.
Forced entry,
but he came in through an unlocked door.
Lock your damn doors.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just a weird thing. I can't imagine, like, being in a place and not having anywhere to, like, go or anyone to talk to, and seeing that you're a suspect in your husband's murder.
Oh, that would be devastating.
So devastating. And then to know, like, your kids are having to plan this funeral without you.
Yeah.
Without knowing where you are. And they're college age, so they were young.
Oh, sweet. Sweet babies.
Right. Okay. He looked at her and said, you know, it looks like I've committed the perfect crime. They don't have any idea who I am or where you are.
Oh, God.
That next morning, day 5, he didn't use the ropes to bind her wrists, but used handcuffs instead. He didn't blindfold her, but he did put the washcloth in her mouth with the duct tape. He told her he was going to go to work, and she knew that this could be a test. So once he said, I'm leaving now, she decided to wait at least an hour before trying to make an escape.
Okay.
The last thing she needed was to fail a test and be punished or worse.
No shit.
So she laid there in the bed for an hour, patiently waiting.
Wow.
And it's a good thing she did, because she actually heard him leave about an hour later. So now that she had passed the test, she knew that she had to try to escape. She was able to open the door with her hands cuffed behind her back. She went into the hallway, which was pitch black, and she said that she had been able to walk around the house a little bit. Like, he had taken her out a couple of times.
Okay, given her freedom? A little?
A little.
Okay.
And so she knew where the dining room was, and she saw that on the dining room table, there was a cordless phone. This woman managed to dial 911 with the phone behind her back.
Whoa.
It took 6 minutes for police to trace the call and get to the house where she had been held captive for five days.
That's crazy. I have a hard time putting my bra on.
I know.
Let alone dialing a phone.
And she's probably, I mean, she's so weak. She hasn't eaten more than this one meal in 5 days.
To be able to have your brain so together to even be able to do that.
Function properly? I can't imagine.
Yeah.
She had suppressed every emotion for the last 5 days, and she says that when she knew that she would be rescued, she just lost it. And you can hear it on the 911 call.
Oh,
is they... her just, like, screaming for somebody to help her.
How did she know where she was?
She didn't. They had to trace the call.
Okay.
Which, thank God they were able to do.
Right.
I mean, it was 1998.
I feel like that's right on the cusp of that technology.
Right. Like, you're going to have to go to a window and tell me what you can see.
Yeah. Not a great way to find somebody's location.
Right. So, Debbie was reunited with her children a day before her husband's funeral was to take place. She said that she doesn't think that she would have been able to heal like she had if she had missed the funeral.
Oh, I'm sure.
Her abductor, Donald Flagg, 40, was arrested at his job at an automobile plant. He confessed and told the police that the day he took Debbie, he was driving around the neighborhood, smoking crack, and looking for someone to kidnap. He saw Debbie working in her garden and picked her as his target. He parked the car on an adjacent street and entered the Puglisi home through an unlocked side door. When Nino came in, it surprised Flagg, who had shot him at point-blank range. Debbie did not hear the gunshot due to construction happening nearby. He hid Nino's body in the bedroom, had a couple of beers, and waited for Debbie to come inside. In May 1999, Donald Flagg was convicted on multiple charges of murder, rape, and kidnapping. The defense tried to present the insanity defense, stating that he was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia and had abused alcohol and cocaine. Nevertheless, Donald was handed down 8 consecutive life sentences without the possibility of parole.
That's what I fucking like to see.
Mm-hmm. And at the time, Delaware...
10 years max.
Mm-hmm. Delaware had the death penalty at this point.
Ooh, okay.
And at first, Debbie was disappointed that
he
didn't get the death penalty. But now she's done so much advocacy for survivors and what they have to go through. She has I don't know if she has the program or if she just works with the program that allows for survivors to talk with their, like,
assailants
in the prison to get more
closure.
Wow. Because sometimes you don't get that in trial. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I don't know if I could do that.
But she did. She talked to Donald Flagg.
Boss ass.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
She said that the procedure after she was rescued was really, really difficult for her. She is a feisty, kind of mouthy woman.
Sure.
And when the trial was happening, she was told repeatedly that she had to hide her emotions, that she was being too emotional in court. And
she's mad.
She's fucking pissed.
Yeah, as would anybody.
Right. And so there was one day that she got up and walked out. The defense kept calling Donald Flagg a bird with a broken wing. And she was like, I had had enough. I had heard it too many times. I just got up and walked out. And of course, the media the next day was like, victim storms out of courtroom, blah, 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 blah. God. And she was called into the judge's chambers the next day and said, like, if you can't hold your shit together, you can't come back. And she was able to, like, plead her case and say, I will not do that again. My fucking bad. And she said the worst experience that she had after was they took her immediately to the hospital after she was rescued, and it was at the very beginning of, like, sexual assault
DNA.
Investigation, DNA, and all of that.
The rape cut.
So now there's a much more, like, kinder and softer procedure.
It was very, like, super invasive.
Yeah.
And
they made her, like, disrobe on, like, a white cloth. They took all these photos of her naked, and it was 2 male police officers that were doing it, and she just felt completely victimized all over again.
Yeah.
So she said everything other than that was the people that helped her did a good job.
Yeah.
And she's not even upset at the men that did it. She was just like, the process was horrible.
Yeah.
So she has a lot to do with the new process.
I love that.
And how we treat sexual assault victims. One of my favorite things that the judge did was that he ruled that Donald Flagg had to spend every April 20th to 24th for the rest of his life in solitary confinement. Because those are the days that he took.
I love that.
I love it.
What a cool rule.
I was like, I am here for conviction. Like, yeah, life in prison, blah, 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 blah. What else you have to do?
To remind you of the heinous shit you did.
And like, that's got to be, like, for Debbie, like, to know those days. Because she talks about how hard those days are for her. And that she and her family now go to Aruba every year and just try to, like,
get out
of the mentality.
Knowing that he is
in solitary confinement for those 5 days.
Suffering only a fraction of what she suffered. But it has to feel a little bit like vengeance.
Oh, absolutely. I love that.
I do too.
So if anybody out there knows of any crimes where a judge has like handed down a sentence that
reflects like the crime,
please let us know.
Oh my God.
I want to know.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Donald was also considered a suspect in other cases.
Ooh.
As per prison records, Donald Flagg remains incarcerated at the James T. Vaughn Correctional Center in Smyrna, Delaware.
Okay.
Now Debbie is an advocate for sexual assault survivors. She wrote a book called Shattered, Reclaiming a Life Torn Apart by Violence, and considers herself a survivor, not a victim.
Love that for her.
She underwent post-traumatic stress disorder therapy and is now living her best life. So remember the guy that introduced her to Noni at the beginning of the story?
Yes.
Well, they reconnected and got married.
Oh.
Isn't it so cute? Oh. And they own a tavern together in Delaware called the Gray Hair Tavern, and I'm officially adding it to the map.
Okay. Okay. Cute, the Gray Hair Tavern.
Yeah, so that is the story of Debbie Puglisi and her amazing survival story.
Great job.
Thanks. Okay,
great job. You did so good. Our stories, weirdly, have a lot of parallels.
Do they?
Yeah,
I love when this happens.
I also have a survivor. So I'm going to apologize. Because I got really mad researching this. And so there's like colorful language.
I can't wait.
Okay. Okay.
Don't apologize for colorful language. If they don't know that that's what this is, they should not be here.
Okay. Well, it's very colorful. The first line is, Joe's son is a real motherfucker.
All right. Starting off strong.
He was born in Gwangju, South Korea. He moved to California at an early age. He stood 5'4", 236 pounds, with a background in martial arts. And please do not mistake a background in martial arts with a talent in martial arts.
I would never do that.
He was fucking awful. He was terrible.
Good, probably.
He fought out of Las Vegas with Lord's Gym, the Gym of the Lord, kickboxing for Jehovah. He fought one match in kickboxing, which he lost. He also fought 4 matches in mixed martial arts, jiu-jitsu and taekwondo, which he also lost.
All right.
2 of them, he was knocked out cold, and the other 2 were surrendered, like the cat piss coward that he was.
Okay.
He was also a professional wrestler in Japan for a short time, wrestling Shinya Hashimoto at All Japan Pro Wrestling 2nd Wrestle 1 event. And he worked as a singer and dancer for Hustle's 3rd event. He is best known for his role in the 1997 hit movie Austin Powers International Man of Mystery.
I've heard about this man.
He was the guy who threw the shoe.
I've heard about this man.
Yes. Random Task was his name. Bye. You're okay. You good?
Mm-hmm. Or just like...
get a celery string stuck in your nose?
No, I just thought that it would be good to like lick the inside of my glass.
Was it not as good as you were thinking?
It was very pulpy.
Oh, yeah.
Which I don't know what else I expected.
It's a Bloody Mary. They're pulpy.
Continue.
Okay. This was his final film role. Previously, he had appeared in several low-budget action films, including Joshua Tree, Blood Fist vs. Human, Target. He played the main villain in the Lorenzo Lamas action film Bad Blood in 1994. He played a supporting role in Shoot Fighter, Fight to the Death, and a leading role as the main villain in its sequel, Shoot Fighter 2. Because shitbags tend to get involved in shitbag activities, Joe got tied up in a little bit of a mess, a kerfuffle,
if you will. A little entanglement.
A little entanglement. He had to plead guilty to felony vandalism on May 16th, 2008, whereupon he was sentenced to probation and 60 days in jail. But on August 18th, 2008, he was taken into custody and given an additional 90 days in jail due to a probation violation for failing to report to the Department of Probation and keep them informed of his current residence. Because, like, you really can't do the bare fucking minimum, Joe. As a condition of his original plea agreement, Sun was required to provide a DNA sample. In early 2008, his DNA sample was then linked to an unsolved case from 1990.
Oh, shit. Flashback. Your DNA, man.
Yep, the DNA.
You better watch it.
It'll follow you around your whole life. So, it's Christmas Eve, 1990, in Los Angeles.
Okay.
The city is filled with the hustle and bustle of last-minute shoppers screaming to find their Furbies, Tamagotchis, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle action figures.
Yeah.
Which, according to Insider.com, was the most coveted and hardest-to-find toys in 1990.
Okay.
Joe's son and another fucking troll of a human were trolling the streets, hunting, not for Christmas gifts, though, for a victim.
Oh, no.
The survivor's identity has been kept under wraps, so I am not going to say her name either. But a 20-year-old was abducted off the street, shoved into a van, held captive in a long, horrible encounter with the men.
What the fuck? So he did this before he appeared in those movies?
Yes. Yes.
It just makes it so gross.
So much worse.
To watch.
He did, and I'll, when we get into what he did, but like for him to go on and then play villains, because he didn't go to jail until 18 years later, almost 20 years later. Right. Their survivor was gang raped multiple times.
Oh my God.
Pistol ripped. Physically and psychologically tortured, for example. Joe held her at gunpoint and made her count and pick out the bullets that he said he was going to kill her with.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
What a psychopath.
Seriously. It's fucking trash. Her ordeal did eventually come to a close when suddenly it was announced that midnight had passed. It was her lucky day, and his Christmas gift was for her to go free.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
I mean, yay, but like...
Great, but...
Yeah. Oh, I hate him.
Yes. She's fucking awful. She was released and she reported it because we love a queen that
reports
to the police. Yes. They retrieved DNA from her during a, what I assume was...
Pretty terrible
rape kit. Yep. But the case went cold. She was blindfolded. She didn't have a good... She didn't know where she was. They picked her up off the street and then dropped her off somewhere else. And
how long did they have her?
24 hours.
Okay.
So, and she was beaten and tortured and assaulted and gang raped multiple times.
I hate that.
I do too.
Oof.
So, they took DNA, but the case went cold. Until Mr. Joe, shit for brain son, decided to vandalize some shit as if he were an angsty 13-year-old. And he had to plead guilty to felony vandalism on May 16th, 2008. So we're 18 years after.
God.
Whereupon he was sentenced to probation and jail time, and he was taken into custody, had to give his DNA. In early 2008, they linked his DNA to this case.
Holy shit.
Before jury selection began for his trial in early August 2011, the initial charges against Sun were dropped because they expired due to the state of limitations.
Oh, there's nothing I hate more. Why do we have state of limitations on crime?
It's awful, especially violent crime like this. Like, sexual assault is like 7 years.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I hate. Why do we have that rule? Who made it?
So dumb.
A rapist made it.
I'm sure. Congress. something. So he was,
Do other countries have that?
I'm sure.
If you don't listen to us in the United States, can you tell us if you have a state of limitation or a statute of limitation?
On, like, rape and assault? Yeah, that's interesting.
It's probably America just us.
Hates women so
it's
much.
Probably us.
Yeah. We'll see. Let us know. All of these charges were dropped, and he was charged instead with conspiracy to commit murder and torture, which have no statute of limitations. So in late August, he was found guilty of one felony count of torture. During the trial, Orange County District Attorney's Office maintained that both Sun and the shitbag he was with, Santiago, pistol whipped their female victim, repeatedly threatened to kill her, raped her before finally releasing her. Santiago was 40 at the time, pleaded guilty to one felony count each of, and this is what Sun was originally charged with as well. Kidnapping, sodomy by force in concert, rape in concert, forcible oral copulation, forcible rape with a sentencing enhancement for committing rape while armed with a firearm. He was sentenced January 28th, 2011, to 17 years and 4 months in state prison.
That's it?
Yeah. And that's just for Santiago. That's Santiago. For whatever reason, the statute of limitation had not expired for Santiago, but it did expire for Joe Sun.
That's so... I don't understand.
I also don't know.
All right. I guess there are some things that I'm not meant to know.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's... the only thing I can possibly think of is he had prior violent charges. So maybe the statute of limitations is like different if you have priors.
Maybe.
Whereas Joe Sun only had like petty crime, vandalism, robbery, that kind of shit.
Sure.
So he was sentenced to 17 years, 4 months. And on September 19th, 2011, Sun was sentenced to 7 years. Right. So, away to prison, he went. But that's not where Joe's total lack of competence and ability to be even somewhat half of decent human ends.
Mm-hmm.
Because, oh yes, there's more.
Oh, lovely.
So, Joe's kicking it in prison.
Uh-huh.
Exactly where his dirty, rotten ass belongs.
Yep.
But wouldn't you know it, in 2017, he finds a way to end up back in front of a judge and jury. Pleading guilty to manslaughter.
Oh,
specifically for beating his cellmate to death in a vicious and overly violent attack.
Damn.
Prison staff responded to his cell at 5:25 p.m. on the evening of October 10th, 2011. So if we're just doing a comparison here, he was sentenced September 19th, 2011.
Oh, my God. So this happened in less than a month.
This happened less than a month. And then he did not go to trial for it until 6 years later.
Jesus.
Right. So they responded on October 10th, 2011, to a report of a man down where they found Sun standing at the door of the cell. And all he said was, "I told you I need to get out of here." Reported by the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitations, he told the responding officer. And then he began washing his hands calmly in the sink. The victim, Graham, was lying unresponsive on the cell's lower bunk with his eyes and mouth open and his skull beaten in.
Oh my God.
Officers handcuffed Sun and medical staff worked on Graham, but he was pronounced dead at 5:50 p.m. He died from multiple blunt force trauma as a result of Sun and his former mixed martial arts hands, who beat the shit out of him.
Damn.
Sun's public defender, Alan Rogers, asked for a lesser prison term in part because Sun offered to enter a no contest plea to voluntary manslaughter after prosecutors waived the death penalty for him. But prosecutors never offered a plea agreement.
Okay.
And instead took him to trial on a charge of assault by a life prisoner with force causing death. If convicted, he would have faced life without parole. But the jury instead found him guilty of the lesser charge of manslaughter. Rogers said Sun's cellmate, Michael Graham, was a troubled individual who was on suicide watch 30 days before his death. He said that the jury's verdict shows it found Graham partly responsible for the altercation. Graham was serving a 2-year term for failing to register as a sex offender. Quote, bad things happen when you have an individual on psychotropic medications and on suicide watch and force another unstable person into a cell with him. He also said that Sun took responsibility for the rape that landed him in prison, and he said that his client called it the worst decision of his life. In response, prosecutor Samantha Allen argued that Sun deserved no leniency. Your Honor, Mr. Sun is a rapist, a torturer, and now a killer as well. He is currently serving 27 years to life, and I am personally rooting for life. And nice. That is the story of Joe Sun, the Austin Powers extra, who is a fucking trash.
Wow. That's so horrible.
Isn't it awful?
So did he get life?
He's still in prison. He's not up for parole for a while.
Oh, okay.
So if after 27 years, he'll be up to parole. But that was in 2017. And because it happened in 2011, they would count it as time served. So okay. 2011 plus 27 years is 2038.
Okay.
Did that math check out?
I don't know. Okay. I'll put it in my calendar, though, because I can't wait to know.
So he'll be up for parole and then hopefully not ever be let out.
I like it when they go to jail.
I like it when they go to jail, too.
I like it when they go to jail for the right amount of time.
I like when they go to jail for life, mm-hmm. especially when they do shit like that.
Absolutely.
I feel like rape and that, like, violent sexual assault
mm-hmm.
is not a far stretch from murder.
No.
It's not. If somebody is willing to do that, they will also murder you.
100%.
And I can't think of one serial rapist who did not also murder.
Eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just if you have that kind of a disregard for human life and human sanity,
mm-hmm.
I don't care if you've never murdered somebody. You do not get to live in society.
No. I'm not saying, like, oh, well, if you're a serial rapist, you never killed anybody. No. Like, you're so much better.
But, like, the rapists who get caught on their first go-around and they get mm-hmm. probation, I just think that that's bullshit.
It is bullshit.
It's
Brock Turner.
Yeah.
You should do that case.
Go to jail forever.
Oh, God.
That's what you get. You get to go to jail forever.
Yeah. Bye.
You fucked up.
That's what they did with Australia. Listen, this statement is going to be if I ever run for, like, city council or anything, uh-huh. why I won't get elected. I think Britain had the right idea by, maybe not Australia. Australia is a beautiful country. But, like, sure. You know that floating pile of plastic trash in the ocean?
Yeah, let's go send them there.
Can we send people there and be like, fend for yourself?
Yeah. Figure it out.
Figure it out.
I like it.
I mean, it's a pretty blasé regard, but I mean, listen, if, I don't know.
We could open up as Alcatraz again.
Yeah. Yeah. Just send them to an island.
Send them to an island.
I feel like there's a chance at happiness, though, there. That's what Australia did. They turned into, like, a beautiful blossoming society.
Alcatraz?
What? Australia.
Oh, okay. Australia.
That's where they sent all the comments. But, like, yeah. Also, there were already people there.
Yeah.
You can't send them to where people are. You have to send them to, like, a
desolate
place. Yeah.
Povalia Island. Let's send them there.
Yes. Yes. What, did we just solve crime?
Oh, my God.
Did we fix the world?
The podcast is over. We have figured it out.
There's no more. We're just going to go straight paranormal to folklore because we fixed all the crime.
Yep, that's it. Oh, my gosh. Wow. What a doozy. Good job.
Thank you. I'm sorry it's short.
That's okay.
But, like, it's a big, fat story in, like, a small little bubble.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, thanks for listening. We hope you have a happy new year.
Yeah. Do you have a bright and shiny?
Yeah. So, my bright and shiny is that when this comes out, I will be married.
Yay!
That's my bright and shiny. Married to a man who has not yet realized that I'm really just a bunch of squirrels in a trench coat.
I think he has realized that, actually.
You think?
Yeah, I do.
All right. I'm not pulling the wool over his eyes.
No, I don't think so.
Fine.
My bright and shiny is going to be my dear husband has been on his first round of like mental health medication.
Yay!
For probably like 2 months at this point, and it is really going very well for him.
Good.
And we love to see it. We love to see healing, and
we do love to see
thriving.
Healing. Kevin's trying to get me on medication.
Is he?
Yeah, I keep telling him no. So we compromise for 5,000 milligrams of vitamin D.
That works.
Yeah.
You'll love that.
It doesn't work.
Oh, God.
It doesn't work. And if we're going to talk about, like, complete, like, open honesty here, he asked me about, I just had therapy a couple days ago, so he asked me about, like, your eating, my eating habits, and, like, how's that going with, like, the Adderall, which I'm losing weight, so it's not going
the way
that we would like for it to go. We're obviously having disordered eating. And so I was honest. I was like, there was a 48-hour period where all I had was 4 hard-boiled eggs. So, like, that's about where we're at.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, no wonder that you have to take vitamins because you're not eating.
You're not getting nutrients.
And I didn't. And it was, like, until he said that to me, I told you about how my hair was falling out.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Nutrients.
I was like, oh.
All of the dots start connecting.
But seriously, I was like, oh, how much of my own life is terrible because I forget to eat.
Yeah.
Or choose not to eat or put it off, procrastinate, or sure. Do whatever. The way I looked at him, he looked at me and oh I looked at him. So, yes, making an effort to eat.
Good. Proud of you.
Thank you. I had handfuls of spinach last night.
Okay. Leafy greens.
Like, yeah. Which, you, I, so you know when, like, people sneak into the fridge and, like, get, like, a handful of shredded cheese? I shoved the spinach. I didn't even wash it.
Oh, my God.
I crammed it into my throat.
Happy for you.
Thank you. It was actually really good.
Good.
Yeah.
So, Happy New Year. And
oh,
thank you for taking us with you into 2022.
Be kind to yourself.
What?
Be kind to yourself.
Be kind to yourself and to others.
Bye.
Bye.